This is Sean Poole. This is the Backstreets.com interview with Nilani and Serena. Fantastic up-and-coming artists. We just saw another amazing show with them. It is Saturday, August 30th, and we're here at Melody's Cafe in Ardmore with Nilani and Serena.
In
Hello.
In a hot basement.
Yes, in a hot basement. And we're going to try and conduct a very quick interview. So I hear that you're working on a Springsteen cover, and we're going to make this available as a download for our readers at Backstreets.com. And what are you working on? Tell us about this.
We're working on "Save My Love," mm-hmm. and it's a really powerful song. It's really the lyrics are as are for all of his songs. They're very, very powerful, and he crafts it in a way where you don't expect it to go somewhere. And you're like, how did he do that? I wish I wrote that.
And it was piano?
Roy Bittan.
That just absolutely captivated us. That intro, not just on the record, but in all the live performances that he does, it completely...
And you can totally tell when it, like, his playing, the mm-hmm. octaves that he does, and I always feel like his hands are like... The span of his hands are like way wider than anything I've ever seen.
Than a normal human being.
Yeah, yeah. But it's amazing. After seeing his live videos and hearing how he plays, he's truly a big idol of ours.
And you're both keyboardists, right? Because mm-hmm. I noticed that you switched off on that. So you've seen Bruce live. I think you saw like one of the Jersey shows on
birthday
the last tour,
show, right?
The birthday show.
Yeah.
Oh, the infamous where you had to wait it out in the rain. And
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Which made it actually even better.
Right.
You just build up the suspense.
Right. Yeah. So why don't we talk a bit about how you guys got into music? Because I just like to know a little bit more about your background.
Totally. Yeah. We started off. Our parents would make us listen to a lot of folk music. We went to a lot of kind of house concerts and folk concerts. And our mom made us read Bob Dylan lyric books. So folk
what,
and songwriting.
I'm sorry, what age were you when this was going on?
I mean, like, ever since we were little, she would just always recite Bob Dylan.
Probably
all the way
to
right.
nine. We'd always, like, read. She would go see this folk band. And she later on, we ended up joining the band. Right. In like our middle school, high school years.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, you can't go wrong reading the lyrics of Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen. And I think that really sunk into our skin.
Right.
And our dad listened to a lot of like Ray Charles, a lot of like blues, like James Taylor, mm-hmm. Carole King, that era. So it was a cool fusion of music in our household.
Were either of your parents musicians themselves, or they just had a lot of interest?
They just did it for fun. Like our dad played a little piano, our mom played a little piano, guitar,
ukulele.
Yeah. And then we just took lessons from there. We started off on classical piano, like any little kid or little Asian kid. and we did that all the way until high school. We did a little bit of opera, a little bit of theater, which was all really good foundations for us.
Right.
And it basically got to the point where we got kind of tired of having this very strict guidelines to go by and singing other people's songs, that we wanted mm-hmm. to kind of step out of that and do our own.
So those strict guidelines, were they like, where were they in place? Like in school, that kind of structure? Or
privately.
Because it sounds like your parents weren't very strict about.
Oh, no. It's more of like the type of music. Like classical is... you know, you have to read to the music, and like it's very.
There's not a lot of room for improvisation.
Right. Or even like when, like in theater, you're singing someone else's song.
Right.
Or we wanted to branch out and tell our story for once,
and not play a character.
Yeah.
Be your own character.
Right. Okay.
And find a way to connect in a different way.
And around what age do you think you were sort of deciding to do that?
We started writing for the first time. 16. And then we did that all throughout our last 2-3 years of high school, decided to graduate early, and just continue writing, playing out, and
when you say you decided to graduate early, you were in the kind of school where you could like moved ahead quickly if you...
Yeah, a lot.
Because I went to a school like that myself. I got out when I was 16.
Oh, yeah, really?
So, yeah, so I wasn't sure, like, if you were in sort of the standard high school mode or...
We were in a public... We were definitely in a public school, okay. But we kind of...
This is in Flemington, right?
Right. Flemington. Okay. We got all of our main classes out, and we were at the point where... we were very, very getting more and more committed to doing music full time. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of that big step of, hey, I want to do this for the rest of my life.
Right. What'd your parents think when you came to them? Because you were like 16 saying this, right?
We would always tell our mom that we would go to sleep and wake up thinking about music. Right. And I mean, they've always been so used to us having music around ever since we were little. And I think they just realized that that was more than just a hobby and more of a passion, and we're all for it.
They're big believers, too, on doing what you want to do.
Right.
And thank God. We're so relieved that they're so supportive.
So in that sense, you did not have the kind of upbringing Mr. Springsteen had, where, like, there was no conflict with the family over... Okay.
But we are both Jerseyans.
Yeah, there's that, and you're from Danny Federici's hometown. Yeah. Speaking of keyboardists, unfortunately, you didn't get to see him play live, but I don't know if you've seen any of his.
His tombstone's right by our house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we're talking like Flemington in like the '90s, 2000s. What's it like there? Like, I mean, I don't know a lot about Flemington, but I picture when Danny was growing up there, it was sort of like working class.
Yeah.
Is it like that now, or?
It's a weird mix.
Yeah, because half of it's, a lot of people don't know it. Half of it's farmland.
Right.
Half of it's like rich yuppies, and I mean it's and then there's just like people like us who just live in like the suburbs, kind of woodsy area.
Right.
But yeah, I mean we're midway from halfway from Philly to New York. We're right smack dab in the middle, so that's always nice that you can commute to wherever you want.
Right.
We had a pretty normal childhood, though. We grew up it being very neighborhood-like, where there would be a fair and everybody kind of knew everybody. But as we were growing up, it became a little more commercial. Mm-hmm. It was a great town to grow up in.
And our high school is the size of some small colleges,
right.
So it was definitely good to get that type of experience, that social interaction with like a bunch of people that you would go through your whole 4 years of high school and not even realize you went to the same school.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was great.
So, I mean, I guess what interests me too is, I don't know if it's the twins thing or whatever, but this bond between you two, like you said, when you were 16, we decided to do this, we wanted to do that. It was like you were already sort of like moving as a unit together, you know? Like you were
so bad with that.
Well, I mean, I just find that interesting. So from an early age, was it like that? Like, you were plotting and planning and conspiring sort of your lives?
We had our own language when we were little babies.
Apparently.
Really?
Yeah, had our language.
Our mom told us that.
We had no idea how to speak normal English, but we had a secret twin language that we would speak.
Wow.
Yeah.
But we would always, like, we can't remember not always doing similar things. Like, it's not like one was a sporty twin and one was the smart music twin. It was always, we always followed the same hobbies, which I guess led to this now.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, our school had about 17 twins, and you always see so many who are completely, like, hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
We never got that, though.
No.
Yeah, well, good. It's kind of hard to stay on stage together all the time. So, you decided to go into music, and, I mean, the music business, when you were deciding this, is a very different business from when this guy was, like, your age or a little older.
But
the similarity I see is that there were a lot of, like, sort of easy temptation ways, and it seems like you guys are totally committed to, this is what we want to do, this is how we do it. So, like, what kind of obstacles do you face today that might be similar to his or different than his that you've dealt with along the way?
We've definitely got a couple offers to do like Nickelodeon, go down the Disney route, and that we always got the feeling that that type of career is very toxic, and you can very quickly be stuck with that image for a while, and it's hard to get out of it.
Which is why it's so cool that when we see people like Bruce Springsteen know what he wants and what he sees himself as and knows his brand and knows what kind of music he is and what he wants to say, that is a huge inspiration to us going into this toxic business, or can be toxic. And that's why we've kind of studied his path and his goals and what he went and didn't go into. He's a very clean guy, doesn't get into drugs, and that is something that not a lot of artists do or preach by.
And you can totally see that's why he has that longevity. And hey, if he can do it, you know, that makes us think maybe we can do the same thing.
Sure. And I would presume that like one of the main pitfalls you would have seen if you had pursued sort of that Disney Nickelodeon approach is you seem very committed to writing your own material, performing your own material. I presume one of the big pressures put on you in that kind of venue, and I'm talking as an outsider, so you can tell me if this is true or not, but one of the big pressures I presume is they want to write the stuff for you, or they want to carve that image for you, and anything that gets out of that or differs from that.
The hard part about that is if someone's trying to do that, you're not saying what you want to say, or if someone... We're writing Bruce's songs. There are songs about Jersey, where he came from. That's his roots. So it's not personal when you sing someone else's song, and it's not you aren't betraying yourself, and that's exactly what.
And you can see that connection
exactly, and that's what people draw to too. His fans relate so much, and that connection with somebody else to a bigger audience is. And we experienced that during his show. It felt like he was singing directly to us in a huge stadium. And that was probably one of the coolest things as an artist.
If you can accomplish that, then you know you're good.
Well, I think you guys are accomplishing that. I mean, and I think part of the reason it happens that way is it's the person on stage is giving you themselves, a piece of themselves. I mean, everything's a performance in a sense that you got to prepare for it, but it's still, it comes from you.
Yeah.
It's part of you that you're sharing with everyone in the audience. So it is like you're having a conversation with us when you're in the audience. And I know that you've been influenced by a lot of other artists besides Bruce, and some of the artists that you've been influenced by, he's been very influenced by. I want to talk a bit about Sam Moore, because I know that that was like something special for you guys, and Sam was a huge influence on Bruce in his sense of showmanship. But how did your connection with Sam Moore sort of transpire?
Well, we were on a radio show with Dave Marsh. We were on Sirius XM, and our manager, we were on there once before, but this time our manager said that he has good news and bad news. He said the bad news is that you have to share your time slot with another guest. And we're like, oh, okay, that's fine, we're used to sharing, whatever.
Right.
But then he said the good news is that guest happens to be Mr. Sam Moore.
Now, earlier that year, Dave Marsh, the huge music knowledge that he is,
and a big supporter of you guys, as we know. He's said a lot of times.
He had known that we were really getting into different types of music, and he basically gave us this huge bundle of just different CDs, and one of them happened to be Sam and Dave. That one stuck out the most to us, not only because it's just great music, but because of the raw soul that just comes right out of it, especially coming from a duo. It doesn't sound like it's a lead and a harmony. It's like two leads that both have the same powerful energy that comes out.
And the way that they interact on stage too, we studied all their like live videos, and that completely transformed my vision as a duo. I always remember telling Dave that I wanted that for ourselves. I saw ourselves as the female Sam and Dave. And
so getting to meet him in person, we almost lost it.
Right.
And just seeing that legend in front of you, and he still has that same energy when he goes up on stage now. It's the same exact thing.
So we ended up learning his famous bad, "When Something's Wrong With My Baby," because mm-hmm. We really wanted to play a song for him when we met him. And right when we sang it on the radio, he ended up joining in on the last chorus,
mm-hmm.
which shocked us. We almost stopped singing at that point.
Right.
But yeah, that was truly an amazing moment. And then afterwards, him and his wife ended up inviting us to his show a few days afterwards at the City Winery in New
yep.
York.
I was there. That was an incredible night.
Yeah. And that was life-changing. That was really cool.
And we didn't realize how much Bruce was influenced by him. I remember like a week after that, seeing videos of Sam joining him up on stage at one of his shows. And
yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He did a show with him, and he's had him.
Yeah.
And he's talked about, I think back in the old days, like Sam and Dave in the 70s were sort of, they had lost some of their popularity, so they would play clubs, like sort of little clubs a lot, and they would be at the Shore a lot, and Bruce, I think, would go like regularly. Greg probably knows his.
Yeah,
like just sit there and study them,
crazy.
Watch and learn so much. I mean, he later called them his teachers. They were his teachers.
After knowing that, you totally hear it in his voice, in Bruce's voice.
Oh, yeah. But I think he takes more of this. I think he's even said that he takes more of the Sam role.
The sort of gravelly,
down-in-the-earth role.
Oh, and the preaching type of thing.
Exactly.
And then when you get Dave, I mixed it up. I'm sorry. He takes more of the Dave role.
Really?
I think.
Vocally.
The gravelly part. I mean, the showmanship and everything.
Showmanship is
from
definitely
both. Yeah.
Sam.
And actually, over time, I would agree. I think you were thinking, like, more. His voice is just amazing. That at this age, voice actually sounds better in many ways than it did when he was younger, because I think it has a wider range now.
Yeah.
He could probably do sort of a mix of Sam and Dave if he wanted to.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, it's big influence, and it's very cool that you guys have been influenced the same way by Sam and got to sing with him and everything. That was great.